The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
Investors in Asia and Europe are exercising caution today and perhaps even a bit of optimism, despite one of the worst sessions for financial markets in half a century overnight. In Europe, the DAX in Frankfurt is up nearly 1%. Hong Kong rose 0.5% today. And here at home, banking shares have led the Straits Times Index to close up not quite 0.5% at 30.40. It was a completely different story, though, in the U.S. overnight. Oil prices dropped to their lowest levels in a year, with a barrel of Brent crude falling below $65. It's currently at 63.5. The Dow shed more than 550 points overnight, and all of the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ's gains for the year have been wiped out. Tech shares were the worst hit, with Apple tumbling more than 4% for the second straight session. And listen to this. Big U.S. tech companies, Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet, Apple, and Netflix, have now shed $800 billion U.S. dollars in market cap over just the past 3 months. All five stocks are now in bear market territory. All the while, though, the U.S. economy seems to be doing pretty good. Unemployment is at its lowest level in half a century. Corporate profits have largely exceeded expectations. And wages in the U.S. are even starting to rise. So why the disconnect? What's driving the sell-off? I pose these questions to Oanda's head of trading, Stephen Innes.
I think still that omnipresent risk around U.S.-China trade wars, it seems to be acting quite negatively on tech shares in particular. I think this is manifesting in two levels. One, obviously, there's a lot of supplies that are being bought out of Asia, and that is a real negative for markets locally. But if we look at the global spectrum, it's certainly denting U.S. markets in the sense that these costs of production could accelerate a lot higher and perhaps price some of these components well out of the market, and these costs would be passed on to the consumer. On the other side of the equation, we were discussing Spygate about 3 weeks ago. Spygate was when the U.S. accused China of placing chips in some technology products to steal some software information. And this is really building to the sense that perhaps we could see some culling of imports from China on that regard. So this is really taking a double-edged sword approach towards global trade. In fact, I think technology could be the next battlefield, and it looks like it's going to be a more intense battlefield than trade war.
Can you expand on that a bit more? How do you see tech as being the next battlefield more important than trade?
Well, given the way the supply chain works, most of the parts in the products are really manufactured over here in Asia. So if the U.S. starts to levy export quotas or even export taxes on Asia countries, this will dent Asia sentiment. Then when Asia sentiment gets dented, I think it weighs out negatively globally. But I think the whole thing is really manifest into a larger scale effect in the sense that we're looking at two levels here. One is on the demand side of the equation, which is the U.S. So if the components become more expensive because the U.S. has to look for different outsources than Asia, then that end product becomes more expensive. But given the fact that a lot of tech sectors in Asia are really manufacturing these components, it also dents sentiment in Asia. There's almost a dual effect here of negativity. And I think this is why we're seeing the tech sector under pressure.
We can't talk about the tech sector without talking about Apple. And Apple shares have really been hit these past couple of days, falling more than 4 or 5% a day. What do you think of where Apple shares are headed?
Yeah, I think this is all part and parcel to the discussion. I think Apple is a big consumer of Asia supply, and I think this is boiling into the mix. But also, I think we have to look at the underbelly of tech in general, and that's also looking at companies like Facebook and other social media that are coming under heavy regulation. So perhaps the use of these mediums to access social media could actually come into serious doubt.
Stephen, let's turn our attention now to the commodity markets. Oil prices basically collapsed, you could say, on Monday and Tuesday, with West Texas crude falling below $55 per barrel and Brent dropping below 65. Why are oil prices in the tank?
So I think there's two emerging narratives here, Michael. One is the oversupply in the markets right now, and I strongly believe that is getting generated from shale oil producers in the U.S. that continue to pump. But on the other side of the equation, we have the demand side, and we're looking at this global growth narrative. It's sort of morphed from a desynchronized global growth, which is really built on an emerging market presence, but now the U.S. are coming into the equation, especially after the Federal Reserve Board sent out some early warning signals that perhaps the U.S. economy could start to slow down in 2019.
So there are some signs that when OPEC meets in a couple weeks that it's going to cut supply to try and boost prices up again. But some people say that that would not be a wise move given the possible slowdown in the global economy. What's your take on that argument and what you think they're going
to
do?
It's sort of a catch-22 argument because I think producers naturally want to see prices go up. And I think the economy, the global meltdown that everybody's predicating their views on is really driven around trade wars. Now, we know that trade wars are freezing over. It doesn't look like we're going to have an immediate thaw anytime soon. However, there's still this light at the end of the tunnel that there could be some sort of pullback on some of the tariffs that are getting issued from the U.S. But this is sort of the wild card argument right now, and this is one of the things that we're keeping in perspective.
So another thing which struck me, Stephen, is that I heard an analyst in the U.S. talking about how oil might hit $90 a barrel within something like 3 to 6 years. I mean, just a couple months ago, we were talking about $90 to $100 per barrel by the end of this year. It seems like a totally different narrative, totally different story going on.
Yeah, you know, the thing about oil prices, it's really a fine line on the supply and demand equation, you know, and this is something that we're looking into how the economies are going to mature as we go forward. One of the interesting things that we're looking at is perhaps the weaker U.S. dollar. The weaker U.S. dollar would actually play more favorable into emerging market currencies. Then if we take out that denomination effect, then perhaps there could be more demand out of the emerging market countries because of the weaker U.S. dollar. So that is also part and parcel into the equation.
All right, so final question on oil here is there a floor? What do you see as the range for Brent crude going forward?
I think what we've looked at right now, we've seen technical floors actually get breached overnight, but I believe, strongly believe, that was an overshoot because the market has been ignoring the fact that there could be a consensus coming up on December 6th where OPEC and OPEC suppliers could actually curb production. So therefore, I think we've seen the bottoms over the short term. I'm looking for a price range on Brent as we enter 2019 to be anywhere between $60 and $70 per barrel. That's certainly a bit higher than what the midpoint currently is now. But I think as we gravitate further into 2019, I think the natural effect of emerging market economies to continue to accelerate will underpin oil prices, and we could see them actually push a bit higher towards the end of 2019.
Stephen, let's bring the discussion to Asia now. We've been seeing this massive sell-off in the U.S. How is this affecting Asian stocks? They look mixed today.
Yeah, it's a bit interesting. You know, I think the market's trying to iron out whether this is an idiosyncratic U.S. storyline, given the fact that the Federal Reserve Board has sort of sent out early warning signals suggesting that the U.S. economy is actually going to weaken in 2019. So coming off the massive highs in the U.S. equity markets, investors are deleveraging. Whereas over in Asia, we've actually factored in these synchronized global growth narrative. But since this is appearing to become a global growth meltdown, including the U.S., I think this is why the U.S. market is starting to tank, given the fact that the U.S. economy was so overly central in sentiment when it came to U.S. equities over the last year or so.
If we look at Singapore stocks, I'm struck by this. I've actually been gone for about 10 days, and the Straits Times Index is more or less right where it was when I left, despite everything that's been going on in the background. What is your take on Singapore stocks now?
Well, you know, it's quite interesting. I always use Singapore as a safe haven route here simply because it's really dependent on a lot of service industry for the most part, besides the obvious export in electronic components, which is a deep-rooted base that they have on exports. However, taking the banks into consideration, I think a higher interest rate environment is playing positive. So we're starting to see that come off the boil a little bit, given the fact that the Federal Reserve Board has been a little bit more reticent as far as their forward guidance has been. Sentiment really is entirely mixed in the region.
So where do you see the Straits Times Index headed then?
Well, I believe it trades very much beta, and beta, what I mean, is very correlated to what China is doing. My expectations for China economy is to continue to sour, given the heightened expectations around trade war to accelerate. And I think given the fact that Singapore is viewed as a proxy into China, I think it also suggests that the local exchanges could weaken over the near term. However, you know, this narrative can swiftly change if we have some sort of light at the end of the tunnel on trade war.
I want to return to something you said a moment ago, and that's about interest rates and the U.S. Federal Reserve. Up until recently, the expectations have been that the Fed would raise rates once in December and two or three times next year. But it seems that there's a lot of talk in the market that that may no longer be the case.
Yeah, you know, I think what the Feds are doing right now is walking back some of the more hawkish interpretations the market had of their policy. I think the Fed is definitely data-dependent, and I think we wanted to remind the markets of that data dependency, see, and not to assume they're just going to do a carte blanche increase in interest rates going forward. So I think that's what it's all about. I'm not suggesting that they're going to pause in December, but there's a potential that they could pause in 2019 if the U.S. economy starts to slow down. We're still keeping track of this. In my view, the underlying components in the U.S. economy look very sturdy. So I would be really, really surprised in 2019 if we had a complete reversal in Fed policy. However, a Fed pause at some point in the equation is not out of the realm.
Well, while the Fed is talking about raising rates, and that's pretty much what the markets expect, U.S. President Donald Trump is saying they should actually lower them. How does this all fit in the equation?
Yeah, this is always a destabilizing issue with the markets when a sitting president starts to question the Federal Reserve Board's view. The Federal Reserve Board is autonomous and not listening to the president. They're going to go on with their mandate, which is going to be entirely data dependent, regardless of what the president says. However, the fact that he is questioning the Fed's policy is a destabilizing effect in its own.
All right, last question for you here before we let you go. Given everything that's going on in the markets right now, what advice would you have for investors?
Well, you know, the problem is that we're getting into is a year-end phenomena where institutional players tend to de-risk. And I think this is a big part of the equation right now. The market sentiment can drift more on a position basis rather than an absolute investment basis. So while these large funds start to deleverage as we go into year-end, it could confuse the narrative. So my suggestion is to hold most of your assets in cash. I think there's going to be pockets of opportunity in the new year, and it's probably best to sit on the sidelines for the next 4 to 6 weeks.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We've been speaking with Stephen Innes. He is the head of trading at OANDA.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.